This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening. Andrew Sherman has served as a legal and strategic advisor to dozens of Fortune 500 companies and a whole bunch of emerging growth companies, as well as an attorney at Jones Day in Washington, D.C. He also has served as a professor at the University of Maryland Smith School of Business for the last quarter century and at Georgetown University's Law and the McDonough School for 20 years. And he's also done some legal work for me over the years. His most recent book, his 24th, is called Harvesting Intangible Assets. And in it, he teaches companies how to take some of the things that they hadn't thought about inside their own companies and turn them into money, the root of all business. Andrew, welcome to America Weekend.
Oh, it's fantastic to be here, Paul. Good morning, everybody.
What are intangible assets?
You know, it's funny. When you and I were boys, most of the balance sheets of the companies that we knew and our parents knew were made up of physical assets, inventory, equipment, real estate, buildings. Today, the assets of the new economy are all intangible in nature. They're systems and processes and algorithms and channels. You know, you look at Google as an example, the market cap, I think, with the latest stock price is somewhere around $340 billion, and I'd be shocked if they had more than 2 or 3% of that in hard assets in the form of furniture or servers or any of those things. And we used to call that goodwill, but I don't think you can call it goodwill when it makes up 90, 95% of the market cap of a company.
When you talk, you recently did a TED Talk, and which is online now and people can go watch it. One of the things you talk about is the concept of the donut hole. Explain that if you would.
Well, thank you. The TED Talk was a lot of fun. And one of the things that was the underlying theme was about hating waste. And I think you and I are aligned in that one. Unfortunately, some of that hate for waste shows up in my waistline. but the bottom line there is that companies all the time give away things, throw away things, discard things that they think has no value until they turn around and try and see if someone might want to buy it. And a donut hole is a classic example. I mean, that was the dough that hit the floor as the holes were being cut. And of course, now the Dunkin' Munchkin is among the more popular things that they sell other than coffee. The same thing has happened in New York. There's chains of bagel hole restaurants now. And, you know, people are realizing that that which is often thrown away actually has value. And at a time when we're facing, you know, unemployment, underemployment, economic, instability, I just hate seeing companies and entrepreneurs and universities and governments even throwing away things of value. You know, we need to be more recycling-oriented when it comes to our intangible assets and intellectual property.
Well, we're talking about a huge company in Google, and, you know, maybe you're talking about a local donut shop that has to try to sell their donut holes again. What about companies that have ideas that they themselves have used and want to turn around and try to license that to other people? Does that count as an intangible asset?
Absolutely, Paul. I mean, that's really... I mean, I think that of all the different types of listeners today on the show, it's the small companies, the entrepreneurial companies, that often they get so caught up in the day-to-day of fighting fires in their business that some of the things that they're using that are proprietary to them really could be utilized by others in their industry, non-competitors, people that may be able to use processes, systems, training, channels in ways that can benefit them. And of course, as you probably know from your own experience in licensing, we're talking not every dollar of revenue yields the same margin. And this is the type of revenue that tends to be very high margin revenue because the thing already exists. You know, the thing that you're licensing to others and you're earning royalty income on is already a Rembrandt in your attic.
So we're talking here about a lot of intellectual property then.
Well, it's a combination of intellectual property, but as you know, intellectual property falls in the four traditional legal buckets: patents, trademarks, copyrights, trade secrets. Some of these things we're talking about today fall within those buckets, and some transcend those buckets. And so, you know, just because I may have something that doesn't fit squarely into a patent or squarely into a trade secret doesn't mean that it doesn't have value. I'll give you a good example. You know, if you or I were to go to Nordstrom to buy a shirt, we probably aren't thinking on the way, wow, we're going to get a really good deal. What we're focused on is the customer experience. We're going to pay an extra dollar, $20 for that shirt. It's for someone to be nice to us. That customer experience is a proprietary asset of Nordstrom, and yet it probably really doesn't fall squarely into any of the four buckets.
I want to go back to the recycling part of this, the not throwing away your waste. Is there also a real entrepreneurial environmental side to that?
Well, I think there is. I think that, you know, obviously we need to all do better when it comes to environmental recycling. I've become a bit of an avid recycler and as I get older. And I think that, you know, if you're looking to drive value in your company, if you're looking to, you know, make the right decisions, not only for your company, but for society, you know, why throw away things that are of value? And we have a number of social media kinds of sites. There's one site that's growing very popular in California that, you know, matches people with needs with people with goods, you know, just making sure that more of these things wind up in each other's homes and less of them wind up in the junkyard.
So give me another example, maybe from a big company and maybe one from a small company. Give me two examples I'm asking for sure. Of things that companies have found that nobody had really said, hey, we can turn this into something. And then somebody said, ah, wait, I have an idea.
Yeah, well, one great story on the big company side, and I talk about this in the Harvesting Intangible Assets book, is what Lou Gerstner did at IBM. You know, IBM, again, when we were kids, was in the business of selling large hardware systems that soon became very low margin. And if you were willing to buy those large hardware systems, they would give away a wide variety of consulting services. Gerstner comes in and he says, wait a second, so we're selling low margin hardware and giving away high value services. What if we were to change the business model you sold these high-value services and basically give away the hardware, get out of the business completely? And, of course, at first everyone thought he was crazy, and now they're one of the largest consulting companies in the world. What that teaches all of us, small companies and big, is we need to have an ability to pivot, an ability to change the business model, a boldness to change the business model. On the small company side, one of my favorite stories is a small company. There's actually their product is being featured in a new TV series launching next week. I just saw it last night being advertised, called the Hoberman. You may remember the expandable ball toy. It starts out small and it gets big, and it's actually covered by 10 patents. It's a small entrepreneur in New York that invented that toy. Well, the Hoberman, actually, those patents were written in a way that if he could tear himself away from the busy business of being in toys, we actually spent a day with him and identified 23 other potential product lines that were embedded in his patent applications. But, you know, he was so busy, as he said, you know, fighting the wars of the toy business that didn't realize what assets he was sitting on.
Interesting. I've got only a minute left here, Andrew, but I want to go to kind of a related topic, and that is lately we've been hearing a lot about activist shareholders. You know, these rich people or fund managers who think that they know how to run a business better than the people who have made that business successful in the first place. What's your take on them?
Well, I have mixed views. To the extent the activist shareholders is a fancy name for big-time day traders, I've got no tolerance for them whatsoever. I don't see that helping our economy or driving long-term shareholder value. But, big but, to the extent that they really are smart people trying to drive long-term stakeholder value and see things that boards or leaders don't see or willing to push for creativity, then I think they're actually moving the social needle in a very good way. So I think we have to look at these activist shareholders, bucketize them as always, between those that are acting solely out of greed and those that are really seeing things that company leaders can't see for themselves.
Maybe along the way, they can help you harvest some of those intangible assets. That's the name of Andrew Sherman's book. The subtitle is Uncover Hidden Revenue in Your Company's Intellectual Property. Attorney Andrew Sherman from the law firm of Jones Day in Washington, D.C. and all over the world. Thanks so much for joining me here today.
It's been my pleasure, Paul. Have a good rest of the show.
Thank you. I'm Paul Harris. This show is called America Weekend. We'll break for some news here at the top of the hour, an update on the Ukraine and the weather across the country and so much more. And then I'll hope you'll stay with us for the next hour on the Envision Networks.